All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, July 22nd, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. We made it halfway. It is 61 degrees and very cloudy here in upstate New York. Looks like we have gotten rid of the hot and humid. It finally was a good sleeping night again. I will tell you, I would never, ever do well in the South. That heat is just not conducive with a happy Jules. That is for sure. All right, so where did we leave off yesterday? We had taken a look at IBM's $3 billion investment in the Internet of Things and their quote-unquote enchanted objects, if you remember, the somewhat smart devices that will be littering your life here in the very near future, the umbrellas that light up when it senses humidity, and the small living space that reconfigures itself depending upon what you need it for. There's some pretty crazy stuff coming on the horizon. We also took a look over the last 2 days in regards to security, government hacking, government tools, that hacking team that's been working with a lot of the alphabet agencies and police agencies globally to spy on people, crack encryption.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Sorry about that. Today is Thursday, July 30th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday. Sorry about that. I had the show still in from yesterday. Of course, I've been up for the last 2 hours and totally forgot to check the automation. Damn that automation. Good thing it doesn't have a gun. We'll be talking about that today. All right, so you guys heard the beginning of the show that aired yesterday, and it actually is a great precursor for what we're going to talk about today. That episode talked about Keith Alexander. And Keith Alexander, who had been the head of the NSA, but he was also in charge of a lot of the military cyber patrol and how he was leading us into cyber war. We looked at some RFIs that Hecht had sent us looking at autonomous applications that they were looking to run. Now, the show that we did, the last live show, which was Tuesday on the 28th, we also looked at those PC hacking spy drones that will fly over and insert via wireless onto your machine backdoor software that will spy on you, as well as some of DARPA's new programs that are the beginnings of Skynet. So what I want to look at today, there's been a lot of conversation going on in regards to artificial intelligence and autonomous robots lately. And gee, who would have thunk it? Good thing people don't think I'm crazy. So there was a story that came out back in August. No, January, February, March, April. Sorry, August. They both start with A. It's early. I'm on cup number two. April 9th, 2015. Why Stephen Hawking and Bill Gates are terrified of artificial intelligence, and add Elon Musk to that list as well. Stephen Hawking, Bill Gates, Elon Musk, when the world's biggest brains are lining up to warn us about something that will soon end life as we know it. But I know it all sounds like a sci-fi trope. What are we supposed to think? Well, I think you should start paying attention. It says, in the last year, artificial intelligence has come under unprecedented attack. Two Nobel Prize-winning scientists, a space-age entrepreneur, two founders of the personal computer industry, one of them the richest man in the world, have with eerie regularity stepped forward to warn us about a time when humans will lose control of intelligent machines and be enslaved or exterminated by them. Ding, ding. Wozniak also came out as well, and he pops up here somewhere in one of the next stories. It's hard to think of a historic parallel to this outpouring of scientific angst, but you know what? I found a clip that we're going to play later where Carl Sagan warned us also. Big technological change has always caused unease, but when you have such prominent technologically savvy people raising such an alarm? What are we to do? I would say, listen to these guys. I'm telling you, they're right. We are in big ass trouble. Their hue and cry is all the more remarkable because two of the protesters, Bill Gates and Steve Wozniak, helped create the modern information technology landscape in which an AI renaissance now appears. And one, Stuart Russell, a co-signer of Stephen Hawking's May 2014 essay, is a leading AI expert. Russell co-authored its standard text, Artificial Intelligence, a Modern Approach. Many argue we should dismiss their anxiety because the rise of super intelligent machines is decades away. Well, I don't think that's true either. Others claim their fear is baseless because we would never be so foolish to give machines autonomy or consciousness or the ability to replicate and slip out of our control. Well, we know the replication is already out a window, and we know the consciousness and the AI is pretty far down the path, and we know DARPA is already working on autonomy. It's happened, and it's going to get better. So I'm going to say right now that none of this is science fiction, and none of this is a nightmare. Pinch yourself and wake up because it's real. The war of the robots is coming. It says, what exactly are these science and industry giants all up in arms about? And should you be worried too? Well, Stephen Hawking deftly framed the issue when he wrote that in short term, AI's impact depends on who controls it. And we know we can trust the military so much. And in the long term, it depends on whether it can be controlled at all. So first, the short term, Hawking implicitly acknowledges that AI is a quote-unquote dual-use technology, a paraphrase used to describe technologies capable of greater good and great harm. Now, when we were listening to the 60 Minutes interview with DARPA Dan a couple days ago, they had actually asked him, what are you going to do to prevent this from being used for evil? And he said, well, there's nothing I can do. Once the technology is out of the box, it's out of the box. And I mean, let's take a look back to Einstein and the creation of exploding the atom and the atom bomb. I mean, Einstein couldn't control it either. I'm going to say, I think kill all robots. I think an EMP is our savior right now. One obvious example is autonomous killing machines. More than 50 nations are developing battlefield robots. Did you hear that? 50 nations. Oh, yeah, they even mentioned nuclear fission. The science behind power plant reactors and nuclear bombs is one of those dual-use technologies. Since dual-use technologies are only as harmful as their users' intentions, what are some of the harmful applications of AI? We have 50 nations developing battlefield robots. The most sought after will be robots that make the quote-unquote kill decision, the decision to target and kill someone without humans being in the loop. This is this autonomous software we talked about the other day. Once you put it into an artificially intelligent piece of hardware, the computer and the algorithm is going to be what's making the decision, not a human being, even if that human being only has a smote of ethics and morals. Guess what? That robot isn't going to have any empathy for any living creature whatsoever. Research into autonomous battlefield robots and drones is richly funded today in many nations, including the United States, DARPA, the United Kingdom, Germany, China, India, Russia, and Israel. These weapons aren't prohibited by international law, but even if they were, it is doubtful that they'll conform to international humanitarian law or even laws governing armed conflict. How will we be able to tell friend from foe, well, combatant from civilians, and who will be held accountable? Well, these questions go unanswered as the development of autonomous killing machines turns into unacknowledged arms races, showing how ethically fraught the situation is. And yes, there are no ethics. There are no morals. Mad science gone mad in every single petri dish, people. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I've said this before. I do not want to see a swarm of Atlas robots coming down the street with their 230-point facial recognition scanning everyone to see who is on the enemy combatant list. Equally ethically complex are the advanced data mining tools now in use by the U.S. NSA. In the U.S., it is used to make to take a judge to determine if a law enforcement agency has sufficient cause to seize Americans' phone records, which are personal property protected by the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. But since at least 2009, the NSA has circumvented the warrant protection by breaking into overseas fiber cables owned by Google and Yahoo and siphoning off oceans of data. And we found out it's gotten a lot worse than that. This article is from 2014. And in the last year and a half, we found out it's way, way worse. FBI has been flying freaking planes over your house, sucking all your data out of your phone. Anyway, I don't care about the NSA. I'm talking about killer robots today. The NSA could not have done anything with this data, much less reconstructed your contact list and mine and oogled your nude photos without smart AI technology. And I'm telling you what else, too. We looked at a lot of the tools that DARPA's been working on. XConnect, maybe it was called, was the one that with a few keystrokes, they could get into every back door on your machine and scan all your files. I mean, this isn't any joke. It's all about the algorithm. It's all about setting up keywords and ways to identify you, search histories, and all doing it in an automated fashion. Slice and dice puts you into the database. Killer robots and data mining tools grow powerful from the same AI techniques that enhance our lives in countless ways. We use them to help us shop, translate, or navigate, and soon they'll be driving our self-driven cars. Good old IBM's Watson, and we've talked about him before as well, the Jeopardy-beating thinking machine, is studying to take the federal medical licensing exam. It's doing legal discovery work. Remember, we found out that they were looking to, I mean, the top 10 jobs would be replaced by robots. Lawyers was one of them. It's doing legal discovery work just as first-year law associates do, but it's doing it faster, and it beats humans at finding lung cancer in x-rays and outperforms high-level business analysts. Yes, they're using it now. We looked last week at how artificial intelligence is going to change economic policy. We've also looked at how they were using IBM Watson in Big Pharma to scan through all the different drugs they have and how to find black box uses for all these drugs so we can have all kinds of new cures for you and me. Back to the story. This cornerstone of an idea is called the quote-unquote intelligence explosion. Yes, exploding right in our faces. Developed in the 1960s by English mathematician I.J. Goode. And at the time, Goode was studying early artificial neural networks, the basis for deep learning techniques that are creating a buzz today, some 50 years later. I want to make a side note here. So back probably about 6-8 months ago, I found a book listed on Amazon way long out of print, but it was through a private seller that had listed it on Amazon called DARPA, The Beginnings of Artificial Neural Networks. And I think I'll have to look. It's actually sitting in my dining room. I think the book was from like either 78 or 79. The very beginnings of them digging deep into research. They put out a book on it. I got it for 50 cents with $2 shipping, guys. And every time I go near that book, it's like having the Necronomicon in my dining room. Maybe we'll have to read out of it one of these days. I don't know. I haven't had time to crack it yet, but I absolutely am planning on it. Anyway, back to this I.J. Goode. 50 years ago, he anticipated that self-improving machines would become as intelligent and then exponentially more intelligent than humans. Sounds like an echo of Kurzweil. They'd save mankind by solving intractable problems, including famine, disease, and war. Oh, yes. And how does that turn out 50 years later? I think they're the ones who's causing it. Nearly at the near the end of his life, as I reported in my book, Our Final Invention, and this is the guy who wrote this story, who is James Barrett. I just scrolled down and now I lost where his book is. Oh, yes, Our Final Invention. Good actually changed his mind. He feared global competition would push nations to develop super intelligence without any safeguards. Well, ding, 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 there we go. Yeah, well, I think he was a psychic because that's exactly what happened. And like Stephen Hawking, Stuart Russell, Elon Musk, Bill Gates, and Steve Wozniak, good feared it would annihilate us. The crux of the problem is that we don't know how to control super intelligent machines. Many assume that they will be harmless or even grateful. But important research conducted by AI scientist Steve Omohundro indicates that they will develop basic drives. You know, we listened to a clip too a few days ago talking about the future of robots and whether or not they get rights. That one story was talking about whether or not they'd have the right to vote, but I think it's going to go even further than that. Once they actually have artificial or synthetic lungs, hearts, blood, and they are able to think, and maybe at some point they'll even give them feelings once they crack all the keys of the neurotransmitters, serotonin, dopamine, all those great things that they're messing with right now. And we looked at that the other day with being able to inject drugs into mice brains to make them react. Who's to say that we aren't going to have artificially intelligent organisms that'll be demanding rights as a living organism? And if you look at the meaning of life, I mean, they already can reproduce synthetic DNA, ATCGX and Y. It's out there. I don't think it's going to be too long, maybe in a generation, by the time we see synthetic creatures demanding rights as living beings. It's a pretty scary thought, and we'll probably be slaves by that point. Back to the story. Whether their job is to mine asteroids, pick stocks, or manage our critical infrastructure of energy and water, they'll become self-protective and seek resources to better achieve their goals. They'll, and then we're talking about these artificially intelligent organisms, they'll fight us to survive and they won't want to be turned off. And I will absolutely agree with that. Omohundro's research concluded that the drives of super intelligent machines will be on a collision course with our own unless we design them very carefully. We are right to ask, as Stephen Hawking did. So, quote, facing possible futures of incalculable benefits and risk, the experts are surely doing everything possible to ensure the best outcome, right? Wrong. With few exceptions, they're developing products, not exploring safety and ethics. And we heard in DARPA Dan's interview that, oh, yes, they have a DARPA ethics board. Well, I'll bet you have people like freaking Dick Cheney on that ethics board somewhere along the way, or someone very much like him, good old Rumsfeld. In the next decade, artificial intelligence enhanced products are projected to create trillions of dollars in economic value, and that's all it's about, that dangling dollar carrot. Shouldn't some fraction of that be invested in the ethics of autonomous machines, solving the AI control problem and ensuring mankind's survival? Well, isn't that a great question? And I'm going to tell you that it is not going to happen, unfortunately. Now, if I can connect, I had all kinds of problems connecting this stuff, of course, after plugging in lots of DARPA this, DARPA that searches to find my stories. Nothing would load. But let's see really quick. I want to load this clip from 1996 of Carl Sagan doing one of his very last interviews. This was with Charlie Rose and good old Charlie Rose, Mr. CFR Charlie Rose. But I do like Charlie Rose. He gets some of the best people to come on his show, and he's still on CBS News, if you can believe it. Carl Sagan, a question and warning for humanity's sake. I love Carl Sagan growing up. Cosmos literally opened my mind to the wonders of the universe and how wonderful just being alive is. But Carl Sagan, in the end, had come out and had given us quite a number of warnings as to where he saw things going shortly before he died. And this is one of those interviews.
But we live in an age based on science and technology with formidable technological powers.
Science and technology are propelling us forward at accelerating rates.
That's right. And if we don't understand it, by we, I mean the general public, if it's something that, oh, I'm not good at that, I don't know anything about it, then who is making all the decisions about science and...
Ding, ding. If we don't understand it, and that's the one thing that we've talked about a lot here, and the reason why I do my show, guys, because there is so much crazy science and technology that's going on right now. And the majority of the adult public has the attention span of a goldfish, we found out. And so people are going, oh, it's too hard. It's too hard for me to understand. So we're just going to leave it in the hands of the people who know and hope everything turns out okay. But Sagan asks some very, very important questions.
Technology that are going to determine what kind of future our children live in. Just some members of Congress, but there's no more than a handful of members of Congress with any background in science at all. And the Republican Congress has just abolished its own Office of Technology Assessment, the organization that gave them bipartisan competent advice on science and technology. They say, we don't want to know. Don't tell us about science.
Surprising to the danger of all this. I mean, you know, this is not the thing.
There's two kinds of dangers. One is what I just talked about, that we've arranged a society based on science and technology in which nobody understands anything about science and technology. And this combustible mixture of ignorance and power, sooner or later, is going to blow up in our faces.
His exact words that we just heard in that story. It is going to blow up in our faces, and it is called autonomous artificial intelligence.
The science and technology in a democracy if the people don't know anything about it. And the second reason that I'm worried about this is that science is more than a body of knowledge. It's a way of thinking, a way of skeptically interrogating the universe with a fine understanding of human fallibility. If we are not able to ask skeptical questions, to interrogate those who tell us that something is true, to be skeptical of those in authority, then we're up for grabs for the next charlatan, political or religious, who comes ambling along.
I am so sad that he is now gone, because Carl Sagan was so on the money. If we're not allowed to ask questions, then we are up for grabs. And people, this is exactly what's happening. This interview was in 1996, and he saw the writing on the wall then.
It's a thing that Jefferson laid great stress on. It wasn't enough, he said, to enshrine some rights in a constitution or a bill of rights. The people had to be educated, and they had to practice their skepticism and their education. Otherwise, we don't run the government. The government runs us.
Ding, ding. And the sad fact of the matter is we are so far down that path now that I don't know if there is any getting our rights, our lives, our bodies, our environment back. This is going to be a full-blown technocracy that is already upon us. And let's take a look at a little bit more. So we read a story, and this was out of the very beginning of July, out of Science Alert. Develop safe AI before it's too late, warns Oxford academic. Oxford is also where Stephen Hawking is out of. So I found it interesting that there was someone else coming out of Oxford bringing up some of the same issues. The debate over superintelligent robots and their potential dangers is nothing new, but it's only in recent years that software has developed the speed and capacity to bring us to the brink of creating a machine that could one day prove smarter than we are. academic Stuart Armstrong, and I think they just mentioned him in that previous article from the University of Oxford in the UK, has been setting out the threat of next-gen AI and says programmers must work to make it safe before it spirals out of control. And that's the problem right now. Look at DARPA Dan. He's creating all this technology. He is scores of programmers building him toys because he came from the video gamer world, but nobody is paying attention to the ethics or how to put a kill safe that it doesn't spiral out of control. It doesn't decide that we're puny humans and don't decide to live. And we looked at a story back last week that they even said, well, it's all about the interpretation. Even if we put some basic rules into the core code of these artificial intelligent creatures, like protect all humans, how do we know what their interpretation is going to be? Protect all humans might mean to an artificially intelligent being to put us all into cages and lock us up to keep us safe from everything on the outside. So it's all subjective. All right, back to the story. Part of the problem is defining exactly what safe means. Oh, here we go. Robots instructed to prevent human suffering. Here we go. This was the other one. Could theoretically decide to kill the sick and infirm, Armstrong says. And robots told to protect humans might decide to imprison them for their own good. Ding, ding. You can give AI controls, and it will be under the controls it was given, said Armstrong. But these may not be the controls that were meant. Armstrong was speaking at a debate on AI organized by technology research firm Gartner, and he said it will be difficult to predict which directions machines are developing until it is too late. Although robots could be programmed with a moral code, defining what those morals are and how to apply them would be very problematic. It is difficult enough getting human beings to agree on right and wrong, and he's got that right, without adding artificially intelligent robots into the mix as well. So, you know, we have all of these technology people, we have thinkers, we have ethicists that are all coming out going, hey, something's really wrong. So a bunch of you sent me this story, so I'm going to make sure I cover it. I have a link to one here out of CNET, which was a publication I used to read back in my technology days. Ban autonomous weapons, urge AI experts, including Hawking, Musk, and Wozniak. Over 1,000 experts in robotics have now signed an open letter in a bid to prevent a, quote, global AI arms race, unquote. And we just heard at least 50 nations are working on this technology. You know, this almost seems to me, we covered a lot of the history of biological weapons and their use, not only in the United States, but some of the other countries that supposedly had them, Japan with that horrible, oh, I don't even remember what it was called, Unit 371, where they did all kinds of human experimentation with biological warfare pathogens. I mean, and then, of course, they quote unquote banned it by treaty we inked on in 1972, but it never ended. But that was one of the things that Nixon had talked about. And the reason why we inked on is because if we all had it, well, hey, it's going to be Armageddon because we're all going to let it all loose. Well, this is even worse than biological warfare, I think. You know, artificially intelligent robots can also develop and release biological pathogens or just, you know, detect and destroy. We'll look at some of that weaponry. I have three or four of those queued up. All right, back to the story. Robotics experts from around the world have called for a ban on autonomous weapons, warning that an artificial intelligence revolution in warfare could spell disaster for humanity. The open letter, published by the Future of Life Institute, and we've looked at them before, has been signed by hundreds of AI and robotic researchers, as well as high-profile persons in the science and tech world, including Stephen Hawking, Elon Musk, and Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak. celebrated philosopher and cognitive scientist Daniel Dennett is among other endorsers who have added their name to this letter. Developments in machine intelligence and robotics are already impacting the tech landscape. For instance, camera-equipped drones are prompting new debates on personal privacy, and self-driving cars have the potential to revolutionize the automotive industry. However, many experts are concerned that progress in the AI field could offer applications for warfare that take humans out of the loop. And I mean, it's gone so beyond that. Don't worry about it. It's already here. The open letter defines autonomous weapons as those that, quote, select and engage targets without human intervention, unquote. It suggests that armed quadcopters that hunt and kill people are an example of the kind of AI that should be banned to prevent a global AI arms race. And wow, what echoes that has to one of my very first shows talking about autonomous drones with HD cameras streaming live video to digital billboards as they're hunting you down because you are a fugitive. I see it happening, people. Running Man, it's gonna happen. It's gonna be all of us. We're, you know what, anyone who's a free thinker, just like Carl Sagan said, once people stop thinking and they don't understand what's going on, it's all gonna be in the control of the charlatans. That's where it is. And so if you're still a thinker, you're one of those people who is a danger to the charlatans. Autonomous weapons are ideal for tasks such as, oh, I don't know, assassinations, destabilizing nations, subduing populations, and selectively killing a particular ethnic group. The letter continues, we therefore believe that a military AI arms race would not be beneficial for humanity. Well, you think? Speaking to CNET a few weeks ago, roboticist Noel Sharkey, and we had an interview with Noel Sharkey on UCY. Michael Cross had him on, probably a few months ago. I'll actually put that into the notes of the show. I've re-aired that one a few times. Noel Sharkey is out of one of the universities in the UK, and he is an artificial intelligence and roboticist professor, very intelligent guy. Noel Sharkey, who has signed his name to this latest petition, warned that killer robots of real life will be a far cry from the fantastical sci-fi depictions we see on screen. Quote, they will look like tanks, said Sharkey. They will look like ships, and they will look like jet fighters. And I have stories queued up just with those very things. An autonomous weapon system is a weapon that, once activated or launched, decides to select its own targets and kills them without future human intervention, explained Sharkey, who is a member of the, quote, Campaign to Stop Killer Robots, unquote, an organization launched in 2013 that's pushing for an international treaty to outlaw autonomous weapons. Our aim is to prevent the kill decision from being given to a machine. The open letter cites examples of successful international agreements regarding other types of weapons, such as chemical or blinding laser weapons. And just as most chemists and biologists have no interest in building chemical or biological weapons, most AI researchers have no interest in building AI weapons. No, but like we've said, once it gets out of their hands, I don't trust the assholes who are in control. They're all psychopaths. They are absolute psychopathic control freaks who are going to use this to take over the world. And this is just so beyond our control. And I don't know how we're going to stop it, people, but this needs to be on the top of the list. I don't care what other problem we have, Fukushima, geoengineering, GMO foods. I mean, those are all big, but once the AI robots start exponentially becoming smarter and reproducing, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? While the latest open letter is concerned specifically with allowing lethal machines to kill without human intervention, several big names in the tech world have offered words of caution of the subject of machine intelligence in recent times. Earlier this year, yes, good old eugenicist Microsoft Bill Gates said he was, quote, concerned about artificial intelligence. While last May, physicist Stephen Hawking voiced concerns over whether artificial intelligence could be controlled in the long term. Several weeks ago, a video also surfaced of a drone that appeared to have been equipped to carry and fire a handgun. And yeah, we didn't play that one because I was remote then, but it was a teenager who had done that. They mounted a 9mm, I believe, on a drone and got it to fire. I don't know if it was autonomous, but they got the drone to fly and shoot, which was pretty damn cool, I thought, actually. All right, so I do have a clip on this. Experts warn against autonomous weapons use.
Machines are starting to take over.
The idea of killer robots threatening to take over the world is nothing new.
If we uplink now, Skynet will be in control of your military.
Movies like Terminator have made sure of that. But fears that this science fiction could become science fact are now growing more real. A group of the world's leading scientists and tech experts, including physicist Stephen Hawking, and Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak, have issued a stark warning in an open letter published today. They say autonomous weapon systems, which use artificial intelligence to select targets without human intervention, should be banned, predicting that in the wrong hands, killer robots could be used for assassinations and ethnic cleansing, and would lead to a global arms race to rival the nuclear era. The US military has invested heavily in the development of robotics for use on the battlefield, but mostly in a non-lethal capacity. This four-legged friend has been designed to help soldiers carry heavy gear across rough terrain without the need for a driver. And this tiny machine can creep across enemy lines and is equipped with infrared cameras. Lethal drones have been used for years by the United States and others to hunt terrorists in countries like Afghanistan. Operating without a pilot on board, they still rely on a human being for the final deadly pull of the trigger. Both Israel and South Korea have used semi-autonomous lethal sentry robots on their troubled borders. But until now, no one has developed a machine that can make decisions and kill entirely on its own. Tuesday's letter from experts warns that fully autonomous killer robots could be deployed within years, not decades.
Ting, ting. They keep trying to tell us it's going to be decades away. I don't think it's decades away. You know, one thing they didn't mention in here, too, are super soldiers and all this crazy brain research that they're doing in order to cure, oh, I don't know, PTSD and inject chemicals or produce brain chemicals when they start sensing that soldiers on the field are getting afraid or feeling anxious to turn them into killing machines.
The warning comes ahead of a UN meeting in November, which will see countries discuss whether to pursue a ban.
Don't arm me.
So there we go. So a UN meeting in November, that would be a very interesting one to be a fly on the wall for. Now, we talked about DARPA over the last, oh, I don't know, 3 years of the show, but in particular over the last week or so. And I mentioned some of the new defense systems that they've been developing. And that one was that autonomous cyber defense system that'll be able to be a sentry. It is like the beginnings of Skynet, the sentry to detect hacks and attacks or to counter attacks. People that they find to be a threat. Here's a story from June of 2014. DARPA launches competition to create autonomous cyber defense systems. And this is exactly the software I was talking about. DARPA, a wing of the U.S. Defense Department responsible for the development of advanced technologies, has announced the launch of a competition designed to challenge security researchers and vendors to create the first wholly autonomous cyber defense system. Now, remember, when we looked at that Plan X, that other software that DARPA's been working on to be able to detect vulnerabilities on the network. You know, they had this entire map of all of these targets, and the ones that were targeted were in red. I'm going to say that it's not going to be very long before all of these systems start to interact and work together. The agency, affectionately known as DARPA, is seeking the development of real-time threat mitigation systems that can think and act independently of their human administrators, because attackers are routinely taking advantage of the lag time between discovery of a vulnerability, remediation stages, assessment, testing, and the final deployment of a patch, which sometimes can take weeks or months. And this is what I was talking about, how this is almost like the next generation antivirus, let's say, or intrusion detection software, perimeter protection. But I can see very easily that this could go from just cyber defense to being global defense, where they're tracking every single one of us. And instead of being a PC known on the network, that they're looking at the vulnerabilities, we're actually going to be a human on the global network that will be considered a target. Quote, this approach has resulted in an environment of ubiquitous software insecurities that favors attackers over defenders, says DARPA. And to help overcome these challenges, DARPA has launched the Cyber Grand Challenge, which I'm sure that everybody jumped on board. And again, nobody is worried about what's going to happen to their creation after they let it free into the wild. The Cyber Grand Challenge is a competition that seeks to create automatic defensive systems capable of reasoning about flaws, formulating patches, and deploying them on a network in real time. Yes, and in the future, it will be identifying targets, 230-point facial recognition verification, and then launching some sort of laser weapon to burn a hole in your skull. By acting at machine speed and scale, these technologies may someday overturn today's attacker-dominated status quo. The Grand Cyber Challenge is designed to provide prototypes a platform to, quote, compete head-to-head to defend a network, and will be operated in a manner similar to many popular security tournaments, and the top three teams will receive cash prizes, dangling carrots for the smart university students. The first prize is $2 million, second is $1 million, and third is $750,000, respectively. Competitors would navigate a series of challenges, starting with a qualifying event in which a collection of software is automatically analyzed. Competitors would qualify by identifying, proving, and repairing the software flaws automatically, DARPA explained. And a select group of competitors who display top performance during the qualifying event would be invited to the Cyber Grand Challenge final event, slated for early mid-2016. Ding, 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 ding. 2016 is going to be a rough year, people. I'm telling you, I think it's going to be bad. There's a lot of things that they've plotted will be ready in 2016. Teams will be scored against each other based on how capably their systems can protect hosts, scan the network for vulnerabilities, and maintain the correct function of the software. Decoding. To decode this, I can absolutely see protect hosts, yes, protect any of their special targets, scan the network for vulnerabilities, yes, scan the globe and find insurgents, and then maintain the correct function of software, well, eliminate the quote-unquote virus. DARPA expects the initiative to produce a number of benefits, including expert-level software security analysis and remediation at machine speeds on enterprise-wide scales. 2, establishment of a lasting competition community for automated cyber defense. Yes, we're going to pull them into the fold. That's what happens. Get our children to start working against us and tempt them with that dangling carrot. 3, identification of thought leaders for the future of cybersecurity. There you go. They're going to bring them in and groom them to be part of the machine. And 4, creation of a public high-fidelity recording of real-time competition between automatic systems. And that sounds very frightening. Realization of this vision will require breakthrough approaches in a variety of disciplines, including applied computer security, program analysis and data visualization, as well as, and they don't mention it, artificial intelligence. All right. So now quickly, before we run out of time, I have a couple stories to show you that this is already happening. This is out of Gizmag. Just over a year ago, July 16th, 2014, construction begins on DARPA's autonomous unmanned anti-submarine vessel. We covered this story at the time. As part of DARPA's anti-submarine warfare continuous trail unmanned vessel program, more affectionately known as ACTUV, Reston, Virginia-based company Leidos, L-E-I-D-O-S, is building the first robotic autonomous vessel designed to locate and track the extremely quiet diesel submarines that are finding their way into Navy fleets around the world. Almost the only thing that justifies the expense and skill needed to operate a naval submarine is its ability to disappear underwater and operate invisibly. That's why countering this advantage by locating and tracking enemy submarines, even in peacetime, is a major job for naval forces around the world. It is a task so vital, yet so time-consuming and expensive, that it once employed almost the entire Royal Navy during the Cold War, so it is no wonder that automating sub-hunting is a high priority. Of course it is. As part of DARPA's program, the National Security Health and Engineering Company, Leidos, is currently building an ACTUV capable of autonomously tracking diesel submarines at extreme depths for months on end. The firm received the okay to go ahead with the work on the craft from DARPA in February of 2014. The unmanned Trimaran is built out of carbon composites using a molecular design and a parallel workflow method to speed up assembly. Carbon composites using a molecular design, that almost sounds like they're using some sort of nano carbon. I don't know. We'll have to look into that one. I never heard about how they're, and they were using a parallel workflow method. So are they using 3D printing? I don't know. We'll have to look at how they're building these submarines, if that information is public. Back to the story. It is equipped with navigation and piloting sensors, electro-optics, and long and short-range radar. According to Leidos, the ACTUV's modular design allows it not only to carry out anti-submarine warfare operations, but to also be refitted for intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance missions. In addition, the vessel is able to report back on the situation and its condition and has computers programmed to identify other vessels and predict what they will do next. The ACTUV is being built at the Christensen Shipyard in Vancouver, Washington, under the supervision of Leidos and Oregon Ironworks. Construction is scheduled to take 15 months, so it should be almost ready to rock and roll here. And with the launch on the Columbia River set for 2015, I wonder if that's the sub. I just posted a story of a sub that was headed toward Washington the other day. I'm going to have to pull that one up for tomorrow. The ACTUV's advanced sensor technology should allow for continuous surveillance, which combined with the vessel architecture and design is expected to provide autonomous safe navigation supporting Navy missions around the world, said Leidos Group President John Frademico. So how great is that? Autonomous underwater submarines that can search, destroy, identify, and surveil. Well, guess what? The U.S. military is also building gangs of autonomous flying warbots. Yes, this is from January 23rd of 2015. Flying swarms of semi-smart drones are coming to a war near you. For the Pentagon, drones are cheaper to buy and to operate than regular fighter jets. An armed MQ-9 Reaper drone runs about $14 million compared to $180 million or more for an F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. But unlike the barrel rolling of a jet, the business of actually operating an unmanned aerial vehicle for the military is lonely, thankless, and incredibly difficult. Yes, but they get to sit in a room and use a joystick. And they get PTSD, those poor drone pilots. So it's no wonder that the Pentagon does not have enough drone pilots to meet its needs, a problem certain to persist as the military increases its reliance on unmanned systems, especially in areas where it has no interest in putting boots on the ground, like Pakistan or Iraq. Well, wait, we've put boots on the ground in Iraq since January, I'm sure. The solution that the military is exploring: increasing the level of autonomy in UAVs to allow one pilot to manage several drones at once. DARPA, the Defense Advanced Project Research Agency, they have their hands in everything, put out a call for ideas this week as part of its collaborative operations in a denied environment, or more affectionately known as the CODE Project. Today, the majority of drones that the military is using to fight against ISIS requires two pilots. Yes, damn that ISIS. ISIS is just a test bed. They're just getting their aim right. The agency is looking to build flying packs of machines that communicate more with one another than with their operator, which we've talked about it. They've been developing swarm technology for quite a while, which in turn would allow a single operator to preside over a unit of six or more drones. Guys, that was my nightmare 20 plus years ago, probably 30 years ago now. Swarms of drones shooting us from the sky, all moving in unison. Together, the flying robot pack would, quote, collaborate to find, track, identify, and engage targets, unquote, according to a press release. It's the engage portion that of that release that rings of Skynet. Yes, it does. The robotic tyrant system made famous by Terminator. But the drones that DARPA is envisioning would not be firing on human targets. Well, not yet, without the approval from another human. The request also states that the targeting would be under, quote, established rules of engagement. Well, phew! And how many Americans have been killed by drones already without trial overseas? Yes, that should make you feel very safe. What are those rules when it comes to robots, they ask? Well, in deciding what drones should and should not be allowed to do, the Defense Department relies on a 2012 directive that states that autonomous weapons, quote, shall be designed to allow commanders and operators to exercise appropriate levels of human judgment over the use of force. And yes, and I believe so much in their moral fiber. DOD officials are always eager to remind reporters that when it comes to armed robots being allowed to select and fire on targets, the department doesn't want to take humans out of the loop. Well, that's awesome. Even so, the legality of U.S. drone strikes, particularly those in which civilians die as a result of a strike, remains a matter of some dispute. Ben Emmerson, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and Counterterrorism, authored a report in 2013 that found that 33 drone strikes may have violated international humanitarian law. And imagine how many. It was only 33 by 2013, and it's gone unhindered since then. I can't even imagine how many by now. In a separate UN report by Christoph Heinz, the UN Special Rapporteur for Extrajudicial Summary and Arbitrary Executions, noted that improvements to military drones would inevitably trickle down to civilian systems. Well, that makes me feel all safe and fuzzy. The report questioned, though, whether any government could hold true to a promise to never allow robots to pull the trigger. And I think not. Likewise, military technology is easily transferred into the civilian sphere. And if the international legal framework has to be reinforced against the pressures of the future, this must be done while it is still possible, says that report. The report goes on to call on, quote, all states to declare and implement a national moratorium on at least the testing, production, assembly, transfer, acquisition, deployment, and use of these until such a time as an internationally agreed upon framework on the future has been established. Well, that's pretty good. That's pretty interesting. By embracing uninhabited and autonomous systems, the United States can disperse its combat capabilities, increasing resiliency and expanding its offensive striking capacity, all within realistic budget constraints, writes Director Paul Scherr of the New American Security in his warfare initiative document. This is wonderful. All right, so we are just about out of time, if you can even believe it. If I have a second here, I wanted to try and play one more thing if I can get to it. Hold on.
But we don't see it as it is. We see it as it was. Many people experience a stirring sense of wonder when they first confront this simple truth. Why? Why should it be so compelling? The immense distances to the stars and the galaxies mean that we see everything in space in the past. Some as they were before the Earth came to be. Telescopes are time machines. Long ago, when an early galaxy began to pour light out into the surrounding darkness, no witness could have known that billions of years later, some remote clumps of rock and metal, ice and organic molecules, would fall together to make a place called Earth, or that life would arise and thinking beings evolve, who would one day capture a little of that galactic light and try to puzzle out what had sent it on its way. We can recognize here a shortcoming, in some circumstances serious, in our ability to understand the world. Characteristically, willy-nilly, we seem compelled to project our own nature onto nature. Man, in his arrogance, thinks himself a great work worthy of the interposition of a deity. Darwin wrote telegraphically in his notebook, more humble, and I think truer, to consider him created from animals.
And there we go, guys. Man and His Arrogance by Carl Sagan. All right, make sure you guys all stick around. I don't know if my bumper's going to play because it was still set on playing a rebroad, so that's okay. Make sure you stick around. Mr. Kevin Blanche is up next, and then it is Thursday, so we have World Crisis Radio with Mr. Webster Tarpley at 6. Next week, it's going to be Ron with Game On Live starting at 7, 8 o'clock Behind the Woodshed from this week with Hal Anthony, Double Crossed with Chuck at 10 p.m. Eastern, and Anti-Media Radio with S.M. Gibson at 11. All right, if Kevin's gonna start here.